Yeah, there's no real reason to shove tons of traffic at the top of your funnel unless you know that that funnel is going to do a good job at converting those people at the bottom. Alrighty, welcome back to another episode of Rogue Startups. Today is episode 78 and it is Inauguration Day. It is the last day of the United States of America under Barack Obama first of Mr. Donald Trump.
Yeah, it's an amazing day, man. I don't know, not to get too much into it, but you know, I never thought it would have happened back in November, and now that it's here, I still am just totally beside myself as to what to expect. I think in a lot of ways, it's, for me, worse now than it was on Election Day. Election Day, I had a little bit of hope that he would really shake things up and be, someone that can do different things in the White House. And he is doing very different things, but none of which I think are good at this point.
Yeah, you know, I commented this a little bit before, but he just feels like your drunk uncle on Thanksgiving. He's very unpredictable. You don't know what's going to happen, and you're pretty sure that it's dangerous, but you've got really no power to stop him.
Yeah. And he doesn't. He's a teetotaler, right? He doesn't drink at all. So
I know. Okay, so that's even scarier.
So
right?
Can he be trusted at all?
Yeah. No, I it's going to be a wild ride, and the next 100 days I think are going to be difficult for a significant portion of America.
Yeah.
So what's the European perspective on all of this? You know, since we're in the American news bubble, you know, you get, depending on which press outlet you're looking to, you get your conservative or liberal outlook on things. But, you know, you're over there in Europe, so you're not really getting that American bias. What are they saying?
So, you know, a lot of the thought over here has a lot to do with Brexit and the parallels that people are seeing between the two, actions and, sure, and unfolding. So I think that in a lot of ways, people look at the Democrats and blame them a lot as saying, you know, how could you think, you know, in hindsight now, that Hillary Clinton, who's like the perfect establishment candidate, could win when there's so much anti-establishment feeling going around? So a lot of people are saying, the Democrats really propped her up too much. And if it was a really fair and open election, would she have won the nomination and would Trump have won the primary? A lot of people think probably not. So that's kind of the real kind of juice behind it. But there's a lot of other things that could tumble in the same direction here. So in France, the election for the president is in March, and there is a super right-wing candidate that is in the final two people. It doesn't look like she'll win, Marie Le Pen, but she could, and that would be that would really kind of set the stage for a lot of that kind of movement across the rest of Europe. So
with the, you know, not to turn this into like a whole geopolitical episode here, but you know, is the mood in Europe after the talk of dissolving NATO and Trump cozying up to Putin? Is everybody pretty nervous over there? Because, you know, if I was living in a NATO country, knowing that U.S. was suddenly not going to back us up if Russia decided to do something crazy, that might scare the fuck out of me.
Yeah, I haven't really heard much about it, to be honest. It's not really come up a lot. Just more like, I can't believe Trump is the president of the United States. People are just in shock, not what's he going to do. Because I think when it comes down to it, he has some power, but hopefully Congress and the Supreme Court can keep him in check like they're designed to. So that's my goal. That's my hope, is he has some different ideas and maybe pushes some things through that are different, but with the checks and balances like the government's designed to have.
Well, here's hoping that the constitutional checks and balances stay in check.
Yeah, right.
Oh, man.
So I thought this week we'd have a little bit of an update. It's been a couple weeks since we've recorded an episode. I know there's a lot going on both with our businesses and in terms of conferences that we've been organizing. So you want to update on how things are going with Recapture?
Yeah, sure. So, Recapture has been going fast and furious. There has been a lot of stuff going on. So, of course, back in December, it was all about training and transition. And so there was an interesting wrinkle to all of that. Right before Christmas, like maybe, let's say a week before Christmas, I got this email from one of the guys that I was primarily in contact, one of the co-founders of Recapture. And he was telling me, oh, by the way, I have this planned trip to Australia. I'm going to be gone for like 2 weeks starting the 22nd. And I'm all, what?
By the way.
By the way, yeah. And we had this thing in the contract that said, I get this month of support and I get 48-hour response time and stuff like that. And so I'm like, ooh, well, okay. And he said, all right, look, I understand that, you didn't expect this. And so he was totally cool about it. I was a little freaked out at first and I was thinking, how's this gonna go down? But it turned out that even though, I was getting a quote unquote high level of support requests, which was like one every 2 days, which is way more than what you normally get. It's usually like a couple a week. Even with that, I was still able to get answers for most things in a reasonable time period. And I still was able to onboard a couple of people and get them up to paying customers. And I was able to launch something on the site. I had to fix something to deploy in Specklet, and I had some questions about that. So that all went, more or less pretty smooth. And of course, there was a vacation time and stuff in there. So I've spent tons and tons of time in all of December really trying to learn. And as of January 1, I've kind of shifted gears into, well, let's try to figure out who my customers are. Let's try to figure out what kind of an experience they have in onboarding. Because at first I thought, I'm just going to start shoving customers into my funnel and see how it goes. And then I looked at the funnel and I'm like, yeah, if I do that, I'm probably going to have a lot of people that just don't sign up. Because I found that my onboarding process has some pretty substantial holes in it. They put some stuff in place in Intercom where it'll be, you sign up, and then a day later, if you haven't connected the Magento extension, you get an email. And then 4 days later, you get one. If you haven't connected it, and you get an email. And like 9 days later, the trial is only 14 days. So if somebody doesn't like do this initial first step, like this is super critical. And I'm looking at that going, that's really not aggressive enough because they've got 14 days to evaluate the product. If you don't get them to do this in the first 3 days, I'm thinking you're not going to get them to do the product at all. So I realized that I had to change my onboarding flow. And so I sort of looked at, well, what's available in Intercom to do this? How can I engage it? Are there events I can trigger? And there's stuff that's in there already. But I was like, I feel like I can do more with Drip and the full marketing automation and the workflow that's there. So I had to decide, was I going to stick with Intercom or was I going to go with Drip? And so this last week, I started really it designing a whole new SaaS onboarding workflow that figured out all of the points at which I need people to engage. Like there's basically five key steps that they need to go through in order to be successfully on. So they got to sign up, they've got to install the extension, authenticate with their store, configure some very basic email settings, and then activate a campaign. If they do all five of those things, they can actually start seeing value from the product. So I had to design an onboarding campaign to try to figure out what are all of those steps, where do I need to bug people the most, how do I want to bug people, how often do I want to bug people, how do I want to label them in Drip. And so I've been kind of designing this all on paper and trying to get some code set up and figuring out, all right, where am I triggering this stuff inside of Recapture? And yeah, I mean, I'm like up to my up to my balls and alligators right now, trying to figure all this stuff out and put it all together. I had this sort of naive assumption, oh, I know Drip pretty well, and I've done their marketing automation stuff and the workflows. This isn't going to take more than a couple of days. I'm like a week into it now.
Yeah.
I'm not any close to getting it done. This is some complicated stuff when it comes to SaaS. It's not as easy as it is if you're just doing like a straight up email campaign on your site and you're trying to follow up with people. When you're doing all this crazy stuff like Brennan Dunn has for double your freelancing and stuff like that, it's substantially more involved. So yeah, I'm spending some hardcore time on that
Yeah, because it's
for
not
sure.
just like the typical email marketing stuff where you're trying to get in front of customers or potential customers or trial users. It's have they done XYZ? Have they activated the account? Have they, installed and connected the extension? Yeah, that's some complicated stuff. I'm doing some lower, much lower level stuff right now, and it's complicated enough for me. I can imagine connecting the app with Drip is takes some good thought. Are you using like triggered events more or tags or what?
Well, right now I'm looking at events because I need to know when these things happen. And so I read through Drip's documentation and they're like, all right, if you just need to know that somebody is this thing, then you want to use a tag. But if you need to know like a time associated with it, an event is probably more appropriate. So right now I'm doing it with events. Maybe that's good, maybe that's not. I don't know. I think the triggered events are the right way to do it because if I use tags, I found that in the workflow, somebody can have multiple tags. And so it's a question of when something gets triggered. If you're just looking at tags, you can have multiple things triggered at once, and it might not be the right thing. Like you could have somebody who is trial, paid, and churned. And depending on what you're in, if you're just looking at the tags as opposed to an event, then you have to decide, all right, well, if they have trial and paid and churn, that probably means that they've churned. But if they just had trial and paid, it probably means that they're paid, you know. So you have to do like a lot of this logic to figure that stuff out. That's why I think the event is better because the event actually says, all right, this thing happened at this time. And you can say, all right, well, now we are in a churn mode because they basically canceled their account. And so now I can run a canceled campaign and say, well, why did you cancel? And yada, yada, yada. And you know, I've been like saving tons and tons of articles about SaaS email marketing and best practices. And here's a swipe file and a bunch of stuff that Drift had sent out. And so I'm like rereading all of these things about best practices and email contents and, you know, old blog articles from Groove and stuff like that. Stuff I knew I was going to need someday. And now I'm like, okay, I need it all now.
Right. Now I actually have to read and understand what that said
Yeah,
2 years ago.
yeah. And I haven't been like diligently reading through it because I knew it wasn't the right time for me to do it. Now it's the right time, but yeah, it's taking me more time than I really expected it to take to get there. So once my onboarding process is better, then I feel like I can start shoving customers at that, testing it out, and then I can see is my onboarding effective, and then fix that. And then once it is effective, then I can basically start hammering away because my VA went and figured out how to dig up a bunch of customers, find some Magento stores that are out there. So now that I've got a list of those stores, she got me the contact information, what the store does, who the person is. So I can personalize each contact. So I can start using something like Mike's Blue Tick tool to initiate that contact and keep following up with them until they, you know, say yes or fuck you. And then once I get to that point, you know, start seeing some customers in there and then start tweaking things within the app. And I've also got, you know, a couple of features that I want to launch, but I feel like the onboarding thing is really something that I need to fix first before I muck with that.
How many, like, how many trial customers a month are you getting right now?
Well, you know, I've only really seen the December statistics because I don't really see what they didn't have a way of capturing what were your old trial customers, like how many trial customers did you have?
Oh, wow.
But it looks like no, it wasn't really tracked. So, it might be in ChartMogul. I've never actually tried to look, but it looks like I'm getting, you know, mid single digits. Yeah, and that's just from word of mouth stuff right now. So.
That's great. And so the content marketing and Facebook ads and all kind of stuff after you get the onboarding process down, huh?
Yeah, there's no real reason to shove tons of traffic at the top of your funnel unless you know that that funnel is going to do a good job at converting those people at the bottom.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you just have a leaky funnel and, you know, you're wasting your time in it.
You have a colander instead of a funnel. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Well, that's great, man. Sounds like the initial transition has gone really well, which I think is a bit scary to say, like, you know, I don't want to drop the ball as I'm taking this thing over. So that's great that it's gone well so far. That has to be a big relief.
It is, and I have to say, I was a little concerned about that. Like, I didn't feel like the product was broken or that the guys who were running it were doing a poor job of managing it. My biggest fear was, can I do as good of a job as they are right now? And, you know, it took me a little while to feel like I can get there, but now I'm feeling better about it. Right now, my biggest concern is I don't understand the code base as well as they did. So it's harder for me to make modifications. I have to look and dig and search and play around with things and try it out. And I'm like, oh crap, that's the wrong place.
Right.
But I'll get there. I realize that I'll get there. I've done this enough times to know it just takes me a couple of months in there and I will feel better about it. But where I'm at right now, I'm just impatient and I want to get there. So it's a matter of time and energy at this point.
So as you're really learning and implementing some of these things now, like you're saying Drift and Groove and some of those resources, where are you finding that now when you're needing like the really good SaaS marketing information that you can and want to implement now, where are you going like for advice or answers?
Oh, well, you know, there's two newsletters that I have been a part of for a very long time. And I would say that anybody who's running a SaaS, if you're not listening to these two newsletters, at the very least, you're definitely missing out. So one of them is Heat and Shaw's SaaS Weekly, although it's not weekly anymore. And the other one is the Growth Hackers. They send out a digest periodically. It used to be weekly, but that's dialed back a little bit. And each time that they come out with something, you know, there are 10 solid articles in there. Not every 10, you know, not every one of those 10 applies to what you're doing. Like sometimes Heaton is talking about funded companies and I'm like, yeah, this doesn't apply to me.
Sure.
Yeah. Sometimes I'll read it just because I'm interested in finding out about it to see the perspective, but you know, the data doesn't really apply to what I'm looking at. But you know, every time one of those things actually shows up in my inbox, I'm like dumping it into a folder that I have to save these things for later, because there's always awesome tidbits that I can refer back to. And it's, you know, the emails are written in a way that you can do a pretty good keyword search and find stuff that you're looking for. So if you're looking for like email marketing or something, they'll talk about email swipe files, or you can just search for swipe file and you'll see, you know, the two emails that they sent out about swipe files where somebody had written about it.
Mm-hmm.
That's how I actually found my stuff today or the other day. So yeah, those are the two primary sources I draw from. There's some other ones like AppQs has a pretty good one, but they're kind of infrequent. Jason Lemkin has one from Saster, but he doesn't send it out very often anymore. I also listened to one from Lincoln Murphy about customer service, but his is more sort of aimed at I don't want to say it's totally enterprise-y, because a lot of what he talks about is just general good customer experience stuff, and it is very applicable at small and medium businesses as much as it is enterprise. And Lincoln Murphy is one smart dude, so you know, I like reading what he's got to say about that. But since I'm not doing Support Vine anymore, the customer support, customer experience stuff isn't as immediately deeply relevant. I mean, I don't want to say that you can't, you know, draw stuff out of that for customer experience and customer support on your current business. It's just I don't need the depth of knowledge that I was getting from him when I was getting ready to run Support Vine, because that was the kind of stuff I was going to use on content marketing.
Sure.
But it's
sure.
It's still great stuff to read. So those are like my primary sources of information.
Yeah, nice. Yeah, I like the Heat and Shaw newsletter. I get that one. And I read a lot of Jason Lemkin's stuff. I'm not part of his newsletter, but I might as well be. Yeah, I read a few.
What does that mean? Does somebody like come
no,
by?
No, I check Saster so often. You know, it's just like I go read the blog itself. I don't rely on the news. Yeah, and then there's a fair amount of guys on Medium that I follow, and I do follow some of the venture funded or the like the VC firms, because they talk about a little bit of more like forward looking stuff. Not that it's applicable right now, but they just had one. David Cancel from Drift talked at Saster recently about like how the people who are closest with their customers and are able to have like the most empathy and the most immediate interaction with their customers going forward with SaaS are going to be the one. So just stuff like that kind of mindset stuff is what I look at from the VC world. Although, you know, a lot of the nuts and bolts aren't really applicable to what we're.
So how about you? How was Big Snow TinyConf Europe?
Man, it was awesome. It was awesome. We had so it's been a dry winter here so far. Up to like a week ago, we had almost no snow, and we got about 2 feet of snow and like 2 days before the conference started. So it went from.
I mean, is everything.
Yeah, it went from like in Chamonix there would have been like 10 runs open to 90% of the runs in the whole town were open over the weekend before we started this past Monday.
Awesome.
Yeah, so it was great. I mean, it all that snow brought with it a cold front, so it was pretty cold. It was like minus 10 Celsius, so like, you know, 15 or 20 degrees, which is pretty cold, I think. But
that's close to snot freezing weather. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So it was pretty cold. But the good side of it is there was almost no ice the whole time and it was sunny. So sunny, no wind, but cold was pretty bearable. I would take that over snowing and windy and warm. So, but it was awesome. The group was great. We had a good variety of different types of businesses. All of us were in kind of similar, spaces in our business and our journey, if you will. All of us kind of getting ready to make bigger moves in our business. So that was kind of interesting that we were all, relatively established in phase one or two and getting ready to move into a new phase with new products or new models or something like that. So that was fun to talk through kind of how we approach learning something new and iterating our business and what does it mean to the existing business when you change priorities? That's something I've been thinking a lot about, and we talked a lot about that. But it was great, man. We walk, out the flat and around the back of the building was the slopes. So literally like ski in and ski out, probably like you guys have, right? In Beaver Creek?
It's very close to that. We have to walk like across a courtyard and through a little path between two condos, and then you're right there at the ticket office and the lift.
Yeah.
Yeah. So super close, but that like massively improves the experience, in my opinion. Like so many people commented on it last time. They're like, oh my God, we're so close to the lift. And even when they showed up, they looked over there and they could see the lift behind the condos if they got there during the day. A few people didn't realize it. They got there at night and they were surprised in the morning. But that definitely, that's not a common thing, I guess, for most people to, be right next to a condo that's right next to a lift.
Yeah. So, yeah. And in Chamonix, there's, it's kind of a wild place. There's like five different resorts in and around town, like within 15 kilometers of town. So like the first day we skied right out the back of the apartment. The second day we actually took the city ski bus to another resort and skied like an entirely different mountain. So it was pretty cool to get a really different. It was the first day we were facing south, so we were in the sun. The second day we were facing north, so we were kind of not in the sun as much, but it was a very different type of mountain too. So it was fun to be able to go somewhere different or like a 10-minute ride and ski a totally different kind of. So it was really cool.
Yeah, it sounds a little like Tahoe's much bigger where you've got a huge lake and all these resorts that are dropped around it. But if you sort of condense that down into one town, one resort town, and all the ski areas around it, it sounds like it would be a little bit similar to that. We don't really have that in Colorado so much. I guess the closest you would have is like in Summit County where there's like Breckenridge, Keystone, and A-Basin. And they're about 10 miles apart. So it's not like a 10-minute drive to get over there. It's a little bit of a hike, but you can at least make choices to switch ski areas if you wanted to during a day.
Yeah, yeah. So yeah, it was good. It was good and got a chance, I talked a lot of really good business, a lot of interesting stuff, a lot of, what the challenges are that we're all facing and how we're looking at overcoming them. And it was a good group to be able to give and receive a lot of feedback all very equally. So I think it was a really great deal. Next year, look to change the timing a little bit. I think it was a little close to the holidays. Some people weren't able to come because it was so close to Christmas and New Year's, and would feel a little more comfortable with the snow if we looked at doing it like late February, maybe, because the same thing could happen next year, but just not get as lucky with the snow. Yeah, it was a great experience as an organizer for sure.
Yeah, yeah. So now that you've gone through it, what was your number one piece of actionable information that you took away from it this year, you would say?
For my business? Yeah, so I think the biggest thing is really identifying like the most valuable thing you can offer and maximize that as much as possible. Sounds really obvious, but we talked a lot about different things that we currently do or we could do in podcasting, and we have the opportunity to do something that's really, really valuable to podcasters. And it was the, like, that is so obvious, why aren't you doing that? Kind of moment at dinner that everyone just said, that's all you should do. Why are you even thinking about doing anything else? So that's cool. That gave a lot of clarity to say this is kind of our one thing.
Yeah, having a group mastermind helps, I think, sort of weed out the noise that you might have in your head thinking, maybe this is valuable, maybe this is valuable. And maybe you talk to one customer and they'll give you one perspective. But, when other people are running their business, the thing that I loved the most about Big Snow Tiny Conf last year was the laser focus and the experience that comes to bear. And everybody's like, why aren't you doing that? Like, you should be ignoring everything else and doing this one thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was super awesome. It sounds like you got that here at Big Snow Tiny Conf Europe. So that's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, it was great. It was great. And we had sort of coincidentally, I guess, we sort of broke ground on the new the new project we're working with. So kind of iterating on Seriously Simple Podcasting and adding some really awesome functionality to it. It'll go kind of in two phases, but we're pretty solidly into the first phase of it. So we're adding offsite media hosting to Seriously Simple Podcasting. So right now, if you upload your MP3 file in WordPress, it lives in WordPress and kind of taxes your web server and everything, which is not ideal. So all other podcast media hosts like S3 or their own server network or something. And so we're building a pretty simple web app and an integration with the plugin, the free plugin to connect those two. So it'll be like a monthly or yearly paid service as kind of a SaaS hosting add-on to that. And then the second part of developing the plugin further is adding a premium module to it all around statistics. So that's kind of the really obvious thing that everyone in podcasting needs. And we are in a unique position to be able to offer some stuff that I don't think many other people are. So that's pretty exciting.
Nice. I love those monetization ideas. Yeah. And yeah, I mean, you've been talking about the statistics one for a long time, but now that you have the WordPress plugin, you're sort of uniquely placed to where you can actually get that, especially if you're hosting the files on your own S3-based service right there. You can totally watch what's going on with that and track it and provide some real value there. That's awesome.
Yeah, it's cool. So we'll be able to give both from a plugin perspective what's happening with people, you know, the how often the page is getting displayed and how often people are clicking play and stuff like that. And like you said, from the hosting perspective, how often is it getting pinged and downloaded? So yeah, it's cool. So we're going to start collecting data pretty soon, I think, and then, you know, just charge people to access it.
Excellent.
Yeah, it's cool. So I've been meddling around in HTML for a couple of days here after the trip, and it's just like very humbling to try. And I'm working with a really awesome developer that has a lot of previous like PHP and web app experience, and now is only doing WordPress. So it's kind of the best of both worlds. He can build this backend kind of web app that we need, but really the key is going to be hooking WordPress into it in an elegant way. So he's doing, he's going to do all of the back end and the API work. And I told him I would do all of the page layout and design. So I've been very humbled by kind of relearning all of my CSS and HTML stuff and Bootstrap. And but at the same time, it's a lot of fun because like all these little nitty gritty details are the ones that are so hard to express to someone. Like, hey, I want it to look like this, but I can sit there and futz around with CSS and the Bootstrap elements to be able to get the pages like I want them to, and then he just kind of makes them work. So it's good. I think it'll be good in that way that we're kind of breaking up the responsibilities a little bit and saves me a little bit of money and a little bit of time. So yeah, it's exciting.
Can I just go on a small rant for a moment?
Yeah.
Fucking hate CSS. I so suck at it. I suck at it so bad. I mean, there's two things that I just can never get right in CSS. Like getting the right selectors on pages, you know, for the basic stuff, it's really easy. But when you get into the really complex nested things and you're like trying to pick it out and say, okay, it's got to be this thing that's in these classes with this ID and these attributes and nested in this way and the way that the CSS file is written, you know, like the guy that wrote Recapture clearly knew CSS very well. And I'm trying to read through his CSS in there, and it just gives me a headache because I'm like, I can't make the selectors work. I went in and I tried to change stuff, and it just like completely ignored all my stuff in the page. I'm like, oh, God.
Right. Yeah.
And I'm trying to use Firebug to figure it out, and it can't happen. The other thing that I hate about CSS is the alignment. I can never get fucking alignment right. It doesn't matter whether it's text or images or things. I can't. There's a funny GIF that somebody's got out there that shows like the guy from Family Guy opening up a pair of Venetian blinds, and he like pulls it up and it like goes halfway up, and then he lets it go again and it goes halfway up but the other direction, and he pulls it all the way up and it comes down, like it breaks off, and at the bottom it says, "This is how I feel with CSS," and that totally captures exactly what my CSS is.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm going to have to hire somebody out for that because I am just not a CSS.
No, for sure. I mean, in all fairness, I bought a Bootstrap theme. So a lot of the pages were pretty much done. I had to create a couple of pages kind of from scratch, but like the home page was done. I just had to put the proper, text and calls to action and messaging and images in there. And then the internal pages I had to kind of build from scratch, but they're pretty simple. It's not, you know, it's a WYSIWYG editor and a list, this kind of stuff that's pretty simple. But is Recapture in Bootstrap, or did they kind of do a homegrown deal?
It's a mixture. It is, you know, they've got a little bit of everything in there. So the guy that wrote it, you know, he did some of the original interface. He just did it straight HTML5 and CSS3. Then later on, he incorporated some React into more sophisticated elements of the UI. For the pages, they've got some very basic Bootstrap in there, but it's not used consistently on all the pages. He did a great job with the pages and the layout, and everything looks really nice and professional. But you know, the whole website really needs to be moved to WordPress so that I can just be doing more with it and like get somebody from audience ops involved with content marketing. Cause the way it is right now, I can't do that. They'll look at me and be like, hell no, Dave, that's not going to happen. We don't do that.
Yeah. You mentioned this, last time we talked. Where is that on the priority list of moving it to WordPress and creating a blog and stuff?
I'm probably 3 to 6 on that one.
Oh, wow. You know? Really that long?
Well, you know, my priorities of trying to get more customers and growth and understanding the audience and fixing the onboarding process, that's got to take precedence on all of that, because the content marketing is about accelerating my growth, but understanding my customers and getting the onboarding process fixed seems like a higher priority, because that's going to directly impact my MRR. And if I can get, you know, enough growth, then at some point I can hire a developer to help me with the back end stuff, and then I can start working on the marketing things on the front end more quickly.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's why it's 3 to 6 months out. I mean, I weighed that right away. Like when I first saw that, I'm like, oh my God. And then when I saw the other things that I had to do, and when I finally started getting into the transition, I'm like, yeah, you know, that WordPress site thing, I really want to do it, but is it really the most important thing? No, I need to do these other things first.
Yeah. Yeah.
So yeah, it's killing me. I'll tell you, I've got a long list of everything, and I'm like, this all needs to be done now. And it just can't be. You know, I'm a one-man shop and limited resources, so I got to prioritize.
Well, it's nice that so much isn't broken to where you have to do all these things. A lot of them would be really nice to have done, but none of them have to happen, especially right now. So that's the upside, is that some of them are relatively light.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, I bought a very solid product here. I'm very happy about that. These guys did an amazing job. I don't want to take anything away from that. Had I bought anything else that required more rehabilitation, this would definitely be a rougher transition, no doubt.
Yeah.
No doubt.
Yeah. So something else we've been doing while I was waiting, actually, our developer was on holiday for like the last week, you know, up till a week and a half or so ago. So before we got started on breaking ground on this hosting bit with Podcast Motor, I had an idea to whip together a quick info product. So we're calling it Launch in a Week. The idea is podcasting has kind of a high barrier to entry. So the target for this is people who want to start a podcast but think it's very difficult. And we're showing people a lot of the things we teach our service customers about it. You know, your show needs to have this and use this to record and this kind of mic, and think about theming and audience personas. All of these things that go into the consultation we give our concierge service customers, and we put it into a 6-part video product, and just started selling it yesterday, actually, and it's going well. It was fun to put together. I got to learn how to do screencasts and video editing and all this kind of stuff, and yeah, it'll be a fun way to, I hope, learn kind of my chops or earn my chops on Facebook ads. So that's how we're going to some traffic to both blog posts to have that are kind of targeted to this demographic, and have people opt into a unique kind of content upgrade, and then drive, you know, email series to them, and also just Facebook ads directly to landing. So stay tuned, I guess, on that, but it'll be a very different type of sales and marketing than we've done with our service customers. But it'll be fun. You know, we're selling it for $100. So it'll be fun to kind of play around with how we can do things like paid acquisition and content marketing specifically for that product, because everything else we've done has been towards our service customer. Yeah, stay tuned. It's too early to tell, but so far, so good.
Cool. So are you actually marketing this directly on Podcast Motor right now? Are you doing any kind of segmenting to say, hey, where are you at with your podcasting? Are you like somebody who's established and therefore they just kind of get your Podcast Motor marketing? And then if they say, no, I'm brand new, then they get this, you know, how to get started sort of marketing?
Yep, exactly. Yeah. So we are going to, that's the first email, is to broadcast email to everybody to try and segment as much as possible. So people will get, if they're a beginner or haven't launched yet, they'll get the course. if they sort of segment themselves. And everyone who's already finished our free podcasting course, email course, will get this kind of sales series as well. So yeah, those kind of things are things that I'm learning with, like, how do you segment and how do you do re-engagement campaigns and things like that. All these, the five different types of activities you do with email marketing, as the digital marketing guys, Ryan Dice and those guys describe. It's fun to put those into practice, because for our service, we haven't sold any service customers off of email marketing. It's just been like content marketing and then directly, hey, can we schedule a consultation or can we get started? But no one's gone through our course and said, wow, I'd love to sign with you guys because your email course had a podcast. Because it's just very different. Our course is a kind of a DIY course, and this is, our email course is a kind of a DIY course, and now this product is a DIY product for that crowd. Whereas our service customers are people who just want someone to take them. So I've done a lot of thinking and talking with the team about, audience and customer personas and writing blog articles and selling to the right type of person. We're finally getting that, I think.
Nice.
So yeah, it's amazing how much you can learn after 2 years of a business, right?
If you're not still learning in 2 years into your business, that's a problem.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's constant refining of everything. And I mean, that the business focus and model is changing. But and so with that is a lot of learning. Totally fun. It's a lot of fun to be creating product.
Indeed.
Yeah.
So speaking of learning, I learned something this week that was a bit of a bummer. So one of the guys for Big Snow Tiny Conf West, it has a family emergency that has come up. And he's not going to be able to actually make it to the conference in a couple of weeks here. So that's kind of a drag for him. But I wanted to throw it out there that if anybody who's listening wants to come and is able to make it on short notice, we've got a slot now for Big Snow Tiny Conf West. If you can't make it, I understand, 3 weeks is a tough time to sort of put together airfare and all of that stuff, especially if you've got other things going on. But I wanted to throw it out there. We've got that slot available, and I'm hoping that we can fill it. But if you can't make it this year, no worries. Just sign up to our email list, and we'll let you know about next year.
What's the date?
It's February 6th through 9th, and it'll be up in Beaver Creek, Colorado again. So if you're not in Colorado, you'll have to fly in, most likely to DIA, and then take a shuttle up there. So gotcha. It's not too hard. There's a, it's a well-tread path, let me put it that way. I mean, Denver International Airport is one of the few – it's the only airport that I've actually been in that has like a whole luggage claim thing for skis, just for skis.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
So hopefully if you're out there and you're that one person in the audience who's been dying to go and you weren't sure before and you are sure now, this is your chance. Act on it while you can. It will be an awesome time. You heard about what Big Snow Tiny Conf Europe was like on this podcast here, and we've talked about Big Snow Tiny Conf West last year on one of our previous episodes. So if you think you can make it, please do. We'd love to have you.
Yeah, couldn't agree, Dave, with you more. Big Snow Tiny Conf Europe was wonderful. West sounds like a wonderful opportunity for one lucky person to get to go to. I think it's just a wonderful type of event. So yeah, if you have time and you can make it out there, highly, highly suggest it. If you have any questions, shoot us a message, podcast@roguestartups.com. And if you're enjoying the show, leave us a comment and a rating and review in iTunes. And we'll see you next time.
And that's our episode for this week. If you have any questions or comments, please let us know at podcast@roguestartups.com. Subscribe to us in iTunes by searching for Rogue Startups. And be sure to visit roguestartups.com for full show notes on each episode. If you're enjoying the show, we'd sure appreciate a review in iTunes. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.